You are Locked On Kings, your daily podcast on the Sacramento Kings.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Well, we're looking forward to this episode of Locked On Kings because we have tracked down the one, the only Scott Howard Cooper from NBA.com. And we're, you know what? We like Scott so much and we know he's so versatile. We're not even talking NBA. We're going right to ice cream because our pre-air conversation was about ice cream. So Scott Howard Cooper, if you had a night and you had a just an unlimited amount of spending cash, what kind of ice cream is Scott Howard Cooper purchasing? And how many flavors?
And by unlimited spending cash, I assume that means no matter how many stomach pumps I need to buy.
Oh yeah, that's that part. You're throwing caution to the wind. You're going for it.
I think a mix is really good. If I can't do something like pure Italian gelato,
ooh,
I'm pretty much a traditionalist. I like the Rocky Road. I like the mint chip. Those are always good. I don't do a lot of the real exotic flavors.
Okay.
What am I missing out on?
I don't think you're missing out on much. I guess my question would be, have you done the double scoop? And if you go double scoop or triple, whatever it is, but let's say you go double, would you mix your Rocky Road with mint chip, or are you getting two Rocky Roads or two mint chips?
No, if I'm going to double dip, I'm going to probably get two different flavors.
That's the right answer.
And it will be as much as I say that I the traditionalist and I tend to stick by the old standbys. I'll stand at the glass and I will audible at the line
if necessary,
and I'll say something like, you know what, coffee sounds really good tonight with the mint chip. So it's not always going to be Rocky Road and mint chip. Those may be the foundations to building the proper ice cream situation.
Are you a sampler? Like if they offer, hey, would you like a sample? Do you do that? Or you just say, no, I know what I'm doing here.
I will not turn down free ice cream.
Okay. right answer.
So if there's a spoon involved, normally I'll know what I want. But if something intrigues me, there was a strawberry shortcake once. Ooh. I had that was really, really good. And that was a decision I made on the fly and
you were proud of yourself.
I was very proud of myself because I don't normally do that, Mr. Conservative.
Yeah.
But I was a wild man and I went a different route with the ice cream.
You lived on the edge and it worked for you.
That time.
Yeah. Scott, how about, this is a terrible segue, but I'm gonna do it. You were talking about building a foundation. That's what the Kings are trying to do. What ice cream flavor? No, I won't even do that. last time we talked, we were getting ready for the draft. The Kings were in a good spot. They were at 5-10 at the time, but they've done a lot of juggling compared to what you've seen from the draft to their offseason moves. What's your, I don't know, just kind of overall assessment of how you would evaluate the Kings' summer?
Very positive step forward. The problem that they're going to face is that it's still a really steep climb, because not only is there a lot of growing up to do with this roster, there's obviously a great deal of emphasis on the youth, even with some of the free agent signings after the draft. But when you look around and see what everybody else did or what a lot of people did in the Western Conference, it's not like things got easier for the Kings in the short term. Their 2017-18 may not be a great success when you look at the standings, but I think it has a chance to be a success if they develop these players. You just want to see some forward progress, some coming together as a team. Let's see what is the attitude, what's the personality of the team going to be like when you go a training camp and a full season without DeMarcus Cousins there. So I think that it has a chance to be a positive year, even though I think that there's still going to be a lot of losses coming, as long as these young guys take a step in the right direction. I think the draft was terrific. I think that when you got to those picks, and including the trade, which reshuffled the order a little bit, all three of the first rounders that they got, that I think that those are the picks that a lot of other teams would have made. That's not to say that it's good to be a follower, but it shows that there's no Papa Giannis pick this year. Everything was made a lot of sense. Easy to say, yep, I can see a future working out. De'Aaron Fox obviously has a chance to be really, really good. But then a guy like Jackson, you'd say, I don't think he's going to be a star, but has a chance to have a long, productive, successful career as a solid contributor in a lot of different ways. And when you're picking in the teens, that's not such a terrible thing. And Giles, it's obviously all about the health. He has a chance to be very good, but he also has a chance to be followed by this bad health shadow for many years. You just don't know which way that's going to go. I thought the draft was terrific. I'm in the minority that I thought that the free agent decisions were not the best decisions that they could have made.
And why is that? Why did you think maybe they misfired there?
Because I don't think that you go into multiple years for those guys. I think that the cap flexibility is much more valuable. That if you have a chance, you've taken yourself out of the running. Obviously, you don't know what's going to happen. But as the roster stands now, you've taken yourself out of the running for some free agent possibilities next summer because you committed to multiple years for George Hill and for Zach Randolph. And that's nothing against those guys because you know what? They're going to win you some games. You're going to be a better team because of George Hill, Zach Randolph, and Vince Carter. But the Kings shouldn't be in that situation where it's the difference if they the difference between 28 wins and 36 wins. They need to be developing these guys. And I understand their logic, and it's not like it's a crazy thought where you say, you know what, you want some veterans around these young guys. George Hill is a quality person. He's a good guy for the locker room. It's not just the X's and O's of what he does on the court. And you could say the same thing about the other guys as well. I just don't think that you tie up multiple seasons of your salary cap. You've also taken yourself out of the possibility in a lot of different trade conversations where you could have been the third team in or maybe in the fourth team in. As these teams try to swing complicated deals, you take on salary and you get a future first round pick out of it or something else along those lines. You start gathering more assets that way. You can't do that now. And I think that what the 76ers did with J.J. Redick was the better move. That you say, yeah, well, you know, we may pay this guy crazy money, but it's for one season. And we haven't. And next summer, we're right back in the middle of a lot of things. And so I think it was much more going 2+ a partial year for George Hill and going 2 years for Zach Randolph. If it was the 1 year for Vince Carter, I say great. Mm-hmm. Do all those 1 year deals. I just think that the cap flexibility is much more valuable. I think you could have got some guys on 1 year deals and they would have come.
Interesting. So how about, and you explained it very well as far as the kind of the cap ties it now has to them in the years. How about just as players? You said those guys may help them win some games. Do you like the additions as players to this roster?
Oh, absolutely. No, there's no question about that, that the Kings will be better because they signed these veterans. But that's the short-sighted thinking that gets people into trouble. You're not going for the championship this year. It's what is going to put you closer to a championship in 2 or 3 years or 3 or 4 years. What's going to get you to the playoffs? What's going to help you become a bigger success in the long run? It's not about the standings at the end of the regular season in 2017-18. It's got to be about, you can't think like you're the Warriors or the Spurs, the Cavaliers or the Celtics. Don't go for the Band-Aids. Don't go for the quick fixes, that you have to be looking at long-term and developing. And again, I know that's what Vlade and that's what the Kings say. That's exactly what they are doing, is that George Hill will make De'Aaron Fox better in the long run. And the same thing with Zach Randolph and the bigs and Vince Carter, just with the entire locker room, just the professionalism that he brings. So that's their argument, is that this is about the long term. And these guys are going to make the Kings better in 3 or 4 years, even when these players are long gone. But At the same time, what are you losing in the meantime in terms of trade opportunities, free agent opportunities, and also playing time? What happens if the Kings start winning a few games early on, and Dave Yeager says, "You know what? I'm a coach. I'm here to win games." And Zach Randolph, you're playing a lot more than Scalabissier. Mm-hmm. You know, then what happens?
Right.
Then is the thinking the same that this was a great offseason? Because that's what I'm going to be interested to see is what happens in that case. What happens if George Hill is not playing as much as he wants and he sees the clock ticking on his career? George Hill is here for one reason, and that's because of the money. He didn't want to be here. He wants to be somewhere where he's going to be able to win now, but the money was too good for him to pass up. And so what happens if the Kings are losing and De'Aaron Fox is playing pretty well and Dave Yeager says, all right, De'Aaron, you know, you're our guy, go for it. How's George Hill going to handle that? So I think that there's still a lot to be determined about the chemistry on this team.
I want to go back to what you were talking about with the rookies, because the one guy that's just still the puzzle, the question to me is Giles. We didn't see him play. They were being very cautious. Apparently he practiced every summer league practice, but he didn't play there in Vegas. And I've heard much of what you said, like this guy could be really, really good. Or is it the injuries that are going to derail him? I mean, that is such a broad spectrum. Where do you think we will fall in line with him, or is this certainly something we just have to wait and see? Because it seems like they're just being so cautious with him.
Yeah, I don't think anybody can make that assessment if they're not. I won't even say if they're not a doctor, if they're not a surgeon or somebody who specializes in these kind of procedures. Because I know that there was several teams that were picking in that range. In that 10 to 20 who said, yeah, we'll take him. Our doctors gave us a thumbs up. There's no red flag. They said, go ahead and take him. But there are still some teams out there who say, I wouldn't have done it. That I know that there was one team that before the draft say, boy, I just like that guy so much. He's a class act. He's very mature, has been through a lot. So, you know, he can handle adversity. Obviously has a ton of basketball talent, but nope, I wouldn't take him unless I'm picking really late in the first round, like 25 to 30 sort of thing. So I know that there still is some concern out there. I don't think that you and I and that most fans can make a judgment right now on how this is going to go, because there are people that do this for a living who say, draft him. He's going to be okay. Is there a chance that something can go wrong? Sure. But there's not that much more of a chance that something's going to go wrong with him than it is for a lot of other guys. So go ahead and take him.
Yeah.
I just don't think that we can speak to the medical right now. We could talk for hours about the basketball aspects, and we could even talk about the decision to draft him, and was it a good move based on the medical risk? And I think that that's a fair conversation for us to have. But there's no way to be able to sit here today and say he's going to not have another injury problem in the next 10 years, or you know what, he's going to have one every single year. There's just no way to know.
Yeah. And I'm with you in the one sense. Then when you look at the totality of their draft to get four players, him included, if this was their only one and they picked it at 20 and they got Harry Giles and that's the one you're waiting on, that's, I feel like it's different. But when you've got three other guys and you hope he's a piece, You can be patient with him. You've got other bigs, and if you strike gold, then fantastic. If not, I don't know that it derails any future plans that you have.
That's a great point. You have to look at it through the Kings' perspective, which is they didn't spend the number 10 pick on him. They didn't spend their only pick on him. They got a lot of other guys that are going to help them. We haven't mentioned Bogdanović yet, who's another rookie that's going to be coming over. So they're going to have plenty of rookies. Harry is a young guy anyway. It's not like he's coming out after his senior season of college. So if the worst thing that happens is you say, you know what, we're going to really take it slow and barely play you or not play you at all, or we're going to you're just going to practice with us mostly, and you're only going to see game action occasionally. That's not the worst thing in the world, because as you said, where they got him, I think that was probably the key thing. Even if it was your one and only pick, if you were a team that's picking at 20,
yeah,
and that's your only pick, there comes a point, and I actually thought it was a little bit early. I don't have my final mock draft in front of me, but I think I had him going somewhere right at the end of the lottery or the beginning of the playoff teams, somewhere right in the middle of the teens. At some point, because we all have to remember, this is a guy that a year ago was in the conversation for number one,
right,
in the entire draft, in what we know was a very good draft. So at some point, you're telling yourself, yeah, it's a risk, but at pick number 18, at pick number 20, I'm absolutely taking that risk. That's why I think it was a great move by Vlade, because at that point, once you get to 20, the odds are starting to thin out a little bit on guys making it in the league who are completely healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a guy that, you know, the big thing is the medical. And that's not to say that it's a throwaway, that you're willing to just waste a pick, a first round pick. But at number 20 with that talent, I think that you're certainly in that range where you say, yeah, that's well worth the risk at number 20. I think that if it goes bad, it goes bad. But there's a chance that pick 20 would have gone bad anyway, even if a guy was healthy. And there's a good chance that it's going to go very, very right. Because, as I said, not just his talent, but I've had a chance to spend some time with him and visit with him before the draft. And I cannot tell you how impressed I am with this guy personally, not just basketball-wise.
That's awesome for Kings fans to hear, for sure. Scott, you mentioned your mock. I know last time we were talking, you were getting ready to finish kind of all the way through that. We were making fun that, hey, you could be off by the first pick just because that's the way these things work. I'm curious if you went and looked back, how did you do on the very inexact science of trying to predict a mock draft, predict a draft?
Not great, not terrible. I sort of got picked apart early on where I had 3 and 4 reversed.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously that's not a big miss, but at that point I had Josh Jackson going 3 and Jason Tatum going 4, and then it went the other way. So I started off bad, and then I think I missed 2 picks on by 2 spots on Jonathan Isaac. And then I did okay. I mean, it's hard to say. It's hard and it's fun, and it is what it is. And I think that you and I had the long conversation before of that I tend not to get too stressed out about a mock draft. you go into it knowing it's not going to be right. I'd love to go 60 for 60, and I'm certainly putting in my best effort. It's not like I'm just going, yeah, okay, no big deal. But again, there's different reasons I'm going to kick myself, and getting pick number 20 wrong is not going, it's not going to be one of them.
Yeah.
I did okay in the middle. I did okay at the end of the first round, where I wasn't necessarily getting everybody right to that team that had been expected. But if I was in within 2 or 3 picks, you just want to,
right.
The idea is you want to give people a general idea on where so-and-so fits in the thinking of the league executives and the scouts. That, do they see him as is he a 20 to 23 guy? Is he more of a 40 to 45 guy? Just if you can get in that range and you've given people a successful read on where somebody fits in the thinking of the GMs, even if you don't get the exact team and the exact pick right, hopefully you've passed along some worthwhile information amid your humiliation of getting all these picks wrong.
Well, something else you put a lot of good time in, and there's great results if people check it out on NBA.com, is the rookie ladder. This is going to be fun for you this year, because that rookie race, or just even how you rank them weekly and periodically for people to check out, this is going to be a fun year based on summer, based on what people thought the draft looked like. It looks like it's not going to disappoint. What's your rookie ladder look like? You know, now it's so much basketball to go, but what would it look like after summer?
Well, I did one that was after summer,
mm-hmm.
But that would be different than what I would have going into the regular season, my preseason one. So I'm not sure which one you're more interested in knowing. The summer league was based, the one I did coming out of summer league was
just based on Vegas and the summer leagues.
Well, Vegas, Orlando, Salt Lake City, but strictly on the results. So I put out this rookie ladder, and everybody would say, I got some tweets or some emails saying, you know, how could you not have Ben Simmons in there? He's obviously going to be a top contender for rookie of the year. And so what I did then was based specifically on play. How did guys do? It wasn't projecting what the season's going to be. I'll do that one on the week of or the week before the regular season opens. And Ben Simmons is a perfect example because he obviously was not in the rookie ladder to end summer league. But if I had to do one right now, he would be number one going into the regular season. Lonzo Ball two. I haven't gotten too far down the line on this. Dennis Smith three. Mm-hmm. John Collins, De'Aaron Fox.
Well, let me go back to one. Why is Simmons one? I'm just curious. Why would you put him one at this point?
Because I think that he has the chance to make the biggest impact. He's a distributor. He's a great passer. He's got tremendous vision. Even at 6'10", he's going to be playing a lot of true point guard. He's a guy that can pass the ball, who's going to be passing to Joel Embiid and J.J. Redick. So they're going to be scoring a lot. Ben Simmons is going to be having big assist numbers. He's going to rebound the ball as well. He's going to be playing a lot for the 76ers. So it's opportunity plus skill.
Yeah.
I think he has a chance to be really good. Everyone wants to wait and see if he can hit a shot. That's the hole in his game, is he does not have much success from the perimeter. But if he can just be decent, it's not like he's got to be at 48% or something like that. If he can be decent, while at the same time the 76ers make a big jump forward, which I think they will, and he has a role in that because he's going to be playing a lot, and he's going to be getting up into 8 and 10 assists, I believe, quite a bit, and 6 rebounds. And I think he's got an opportunity to be really good.
Would he have been one in this if he was put in this draft class, would he have gone first?
Yeah, I think so. I think that he would have been one. I'm trying to think back. I've already forgotten how things shook out even two drafts ago. I think he would have been number one, I think, probably 3 years in a row. People have been on the Ben Simmons bandwagon since long before he got to LSU.
Gotcha. Yeah, I the one thing I wondered about him, I mean, I'm anxious to see him, but with Fultz too, if they, I don't know, not split the votes, but if they do better, and I believe, like you said, Scott, I do think Philadelphia will just, that would grant, they're going to have more wins, and they're all going to be kind of responsible for it. I just wonder if maybe his stats will show that he's more responsible than a guy like Fultz. I don't know. We'll see. That'll be fun to watch.
That'll be one of the things, one of the layers that we will be following. Probably not unlike a little bit last year did Joel Embiid and Dario Saric.
Sure.
Split votes. If you're in Philadelphia, you're thinking, well, I definitely want to do a Sixers guy, but, you know, which way do I go? And so, yeah, there's no question that could be a factor again. But I think that you hit on the key point at the very beginning of this topic, which is it could be a great, great year. It could be a lot of fun. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because it's July. So we can't speak to what's going to happen. But there's no question that the depth and just the level of conversation this year compared to a year ago is a completely different world. That there were times last year when I would do a top 10, it was like, you know, geez, I got to grab somebody here to kind of fill it out. And I could easily, if I were to sit down right now and do a preseason top 10, I could easily do a top 15 and still be leaving guys out. I think you nailed it when you say that this has a chance to be really good and a great deal of interest in the rookie class.
Yeah. Last thing I have for you, this one really surprised me. Maybe those like you that are really in the inner NBA circle had a better pulse of this, but when Kyrie Irving dropped that bombshell last week, I guess it was Friday, or I can't say he did, when it became public to the rest of us, I was shocked. I really was. Where's this going, Scott? How does this play out? Obviously, they don't have to trade him, but he's made this difficult. What do you think happens at the start of the season? Is Kyrie Irving still a Cavalier?
I believe he will be. I think that Cleveland will look around. They know that it's an uncomfortable situation. It's not ideal, but at the same time, you know that things work with the way the team is. And if he's going to carry himself as a professional, and you're certainly hoping that he is, as much as he's unhappy, if he is on your roster on opening night, you certainly hope that he's going to be the same as when Kyrie was happy a few years ago. I think that there's a chance that the new GM says, you know, let me, I can solve this, which of course is the mindset of a million different coaches and GMs, which is no, I can handle DeMarcus. You know, I can be the one I can get this Kyrie Irving situation resolved. So I think that there is a chance that he's on the team. I don't know if LeBron and Kyrie at some point sits down and LeBron says, you know what, I get that there's parts of me that you don't like, whether it's my game or me personally, but we're here to win games, right? And if Kyrie says, yes, we are, then that's still a pretty good team. That they've handled distractions before. This is the team that when a couple, you know, the year that they won a championship or the year that they fired their coach. And the year before, there was all this speculation about if the coach was going to get fired. They didn't fire him. And they got to the finals and had a pretty credible showing there amid a lot of injuries. There's always anything with LeBron is going to be a circus. This is just a different kind of circus. So I don't think it's the kind of thing like, oh, my gosh, it's going to be this crazy distraction. I don't think it's like the Pacers if they would have gone into the season with Paul George. I think it's a different deal because you have a chance to win and win a lot if you're Cleveland. And I think that there's a very good chance that while everybody is tossing in all these different trade scenarios, that obviously the Cavaliers are having these conversations with teams and they're getting a sense for what the market is looking like. But I don't think it's an automatic that they're going to jump at something and say, we got to get this done. We just got to get this behind us. Because especially if you go the prospects and picks route, then you've changed the entire dimension of your team.
Well, Scott, we started with dessert. We're going to finish with dessert. Back to ice cream. Let me see. I'm going to give you choices. If you could have a milkshake, what else could we have? Ice cream cake, a banana split, or just ice cream. So they're all kind of ice cream related. So, but milkshake, banana split, ice cream cake, or ice cream. What do you have?
Yeah, you could have killed me if you had mentioned a couple other words. So thank you.
No. What would tip the scale here on your...
Thank you for not putting tiramisu out there.
Oh, really?
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
Every night. Cannolis.
Cannolis. Oh, wow. You're... Okay.
Cannolis, but they got to be done right.
Yeah.
You have to drain the ricotta overnight before you put it to you.
So what if it was tiramisu or cannolis?
Between those two?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's like your one seeds. I don't know what you do. So then what would you do with the other one? The milkshake, the banana split, the ice cream cake, or ice cream?
That's a fair question. I'm not a huge milkshake guy.
Okay, so it's gone.
That's gone, so I'm down. The ice cream cake can be good. I'd probably go ice cream.
Just traditional, and there's nothing wrong with that.
I said at the very beginning, I'm a traditionalist, so yeah. I could do ice cream. Now I'm going to want a lot of things on it.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Not hot fudge. I'm not a butterscotch guy or anything, but a lot of whipped cream.
Yeah.
Nuts, cherries.
Yeah. Like a version of the banana split without the banana.
And the banana split works as well. That's probably your two seed in the West region.
But tiramisu and cannolis done right. That's the one. That's the favorite.
Among others, there's several other possibilities out there. Mochi. Have you had mochi?
No, you've been all over the world. Like, you know this stuff. You're traveled.
Yeah, but you can get mochi here.
Okay.
You got to try that.
What is that?
That is a Japanese ice cream where for lack of a better description, there's something of a shell that's over the ice cream, but it's flavored. It's like a sugar kind of a paste.
Okay.
That just gives it a different texture. And some of the mochi flavors. If you go to places that do it right, it's just so pure, and it's got a great flavor. And damn you for doing this to me. And now I need to go find a place late at night that serves mochi ice cream.
Well, let me know, because I'll go with you.
People are going to be listening to this podcast, and all of a sudden the mochi, it's going to be a run of mochi around all your listeners.
That's right. And we can credit you on that, but that's good.
Well, I'm always up for dessert conversation. So twist my arm and next time we'll do burgers or steaks or something.
Yeah. Next year. Well, you need another year like this last one. Cause this year your rookie ladder, like you said, you're not going to have any trouble, but then maybe you just get to ice cream ladder or dessert ladder. I mean, you could just do different things, because last year it was tough to fill that out each week. This year you won't have that problem, but maybe on the next slow year you can do foods or different things.
This is why you're one of the greats, because that's exactly the move that I should have made this last year. I should have just...
NBA.com would be okay with that, right?
No. they would look at it and say, okay, for 1 week.
Well, yeah, then, maybe.
Then we're going to have to get them on the phone, because I actually, I kind of joke around, and I have tweeted it out in the past. And by the way, I apologize in advance for everybody clicking off here.
No, they're in.
That your ratings are, that your numbers are going way down with this conversation. But I had done restaurant power rankings.
Oh.
A couple years ago. And actually, I kept one this last year. And I just do it, sort of consider the NBA season.
Uh-huh.
Just NBA stops only. Not just places I had gone on my own.
Right.
And just the different ones I like. So I could have dropped in a top 10 restaurant power rankings.
From NBA cities?
Or NBA stops, like I did one in Vancouver. Like, I went to Vancouver for an exhibition game.
Gotcha.
And there was a place there that definitely made the list. Or Las Vegas, there's two places that I really love, and you're there for Summer League. So not necessarily NBA cities.
Gotcha.
But that you were there on, that there was some sort of NBA connection. But most of them, are NBA cities.
Well, you got me. I'm a faithful reader, so whatever you put up there, I'm reading it. So you have at least some audience for that.
I could do restaurant power rankings and make a lot of people happy and have a lot of people thinking, what the what?
but you really got them thinking.
Did he really just do this?
Yeah.
Did he really just do this? And by the way, he's got 3 and 4 in the wrong order.
Yeah, exactly. I can't stand this, but why didn't you put this restaurant in there? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. There would be a lot of, people love talking about food and beverages and things like that.
They can relate.
It's a fun thing.
Yeah.
It's a fun thing. And everyone's got an opinion on that. And you don't need to be a basketball guy that watches 10 games a night to be able, you just know that you went to a place and you liked it.
Yeah.
And the food was good and the service was good. And it was a great experience, or the opposite, that I went to a place that has gotten some very high reviews and didn't like it. And so it did not make my informal top 10 from this past season.
Hmm. That's awesome. Scott, this was wonderful. Love doing it. We'll have to do it again soon, and we'll go get some mochi.
I'll meet you at the store.
There you go. Thank you, Scott.
Have a great time.
Scott Howard Cooper joining us from NBA.com. You can look for the rookie ladder and maybe the restaurant rankings or dessert rankings, all of that. Fun conversation, though, with Scott Howard Cooper. Thank you so much for joining us today on another edition of Locked On Kings. Get your questions in for the Friday mailbag, jason.ross@cbsradio.com or on Twitter @jasonross1140. And to be honest, if you've got some dessert suggestions for Scott, for myself, send them our way. We'll appreciate that as well. Thank you again for listening. Back again tomorrow for another edition of Locked On Kings.
You are Locked On Kings, your daily Sacramento Kings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.